Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Want to get a little more from every sip? Smartwater Alkaline doesn't just taste crisp and pure. It's loaded with everything you need to perform at your best, whether you're running marathons or boardroom meetings. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to episode 51 of the Talking Chop Podcast. I am Carlos Collazo, your co-host, as always. And back with us this week after skipping out last week is Brad Rowland. Brad, how's it going, man?
I'm not sure I skipped out last week. You had a much better, more qualified person to talk with. And shout out to Kevin McAlpin. If you missed that podcast, go listen to it. It was better than what I normally would say. And Kevin's a smart guy. But it's nice to be back, man. It's good to talk some baseball, to take my mind off of other sporting things, so it's nice to be here.
Yeah, Brad, you had a devastating loss, as well as the entire city of Atlanta, and really, I feel like most of America was pulling for your Falcons in the Super Bowl there. I know I was definitely disappointed to see the result of that, but if it's not too early, or if it's late enough, do you want to talk a little bit about your experience watching that Falcons game? I mean, I feel like you're one of the more prominent Atlanta guys, at least in my network of sports writers and sports fans, people who know what they're talking about. You want to just take us through your experience of the Falcons' second Super Bowl?
Yeah, I haven't tried to do this before, so this should be interesting. I don't know. It was a lot of terror leading up to the game, as we talked about, I believe, 2 weeks ago on the podcast. That was with 1 week to go, of course, and we should let people, we're recording this on Sunday night, so it's been about exactly a week since this all transpired. Yeah, it was terror leading up, a lot of excitement early on, but if you know me, if you listen to this podcast, I know you know me well. My guard was up for the most part, until it was, I think it was 28, when it went to 28-3. My guard went down a little bit in the second half, which was a mistake. Never let your guard down with Atlanta sports if you're an Atlanta sports fan. It's never a good idea. Yeah, and from there, I mean, you know, we all know what happened at this point in time. And by the end, I was sort of a mess. I had a long drive also after the game, which was not a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it was – I wasn't ready to talk about it at all. Still not really ready to talk about specifics, as you can probably tell. But yeah, it was one of those times where sports are bad. Normally, sports are very good. We like sports on this podcast, even beyond baseball. I know you have covered other sports and have done other things and enjoy the sports. But yeah, that was not a fun sports day for someone who really likes sports more than most anything in my life. So yeah, it was a sort of a rough one. But hey, the Braves are here, man. It's a good time the Braves to be starting, because baseball, the whole hope springs eternal thing is definitely something that we all need right now, I think, as Atlanta sports fans.
Yeah, certainly. And if you are really getting excited about the Braves season starting up soon, there was some big news late last night, really late. It was unfortunate timing, but it seems like the entire Braves fan base was out watching Twitter and hearing about the Brandon Phillips trade. So if you haven't heard, for whatever reason, the Braves have officially traded for Brandon Phillips with the Reds. They sent Andrew McCurahan and Carlos Portuondo to Cincinnati. And Portuondo, I apologize if I pronounce your name wrong, but this is the first time. This is the first time I've ever seen this guy's name. So I guess
that was a good effort by you. Listen, we all, I think, in unison were kind of thinking, is that a Braves prospect?
Yeah.
And he's not, because he's 29 years old. So no offense to that gentleman, but yeah, kind of weird, but hey, it's not too bad.
Yeah, in addition to sending those two over, Atlanta will be taking on $1 million of the $14 million owed to Brandon Phillips this year. So I feel like everyone kind of agrees that this was an extremely light return for Cincinnati. I don't think anyone was expecting them to get some kind of big prospect haul from the Braves, and we certainly didn't expect to pay that for Brandon Phillips. A little bit of some kind of complicated stuff with his no trade clause that's happening with this deal. Brandon Phillips had a full no trade clause because he's a 10-5 player with the Reds, but with that trade, I guess that 10-5 rule kind of becomes moot. But with his extension, Phillips also had a limited no-trade clause that blocks trades to 12 different teams. And despite the Braves' history with no-trade clauses, they're going to honor this, the limited no-trade clause. And I believe Phillips will be owed $500,000 extra if he gets traded to one of the teams, if he gets traded at all, actually. So if he waives the no-trade clause or gets traded to a team that he doesn't have rights to block to, he'll get $500,000. But, I mean, a pretty light return for the Reds, in my opinion. I'm perfectly happy with this deal. A lot of Braves fans were kind of freaking out when the rumors of Phillips to Atlanta started becoming a thing on Twitter, just because Phillips, I believe, is a pretty polarizing player. A lot of people aren't really excited about what he can bring to the table at this point. But what are your thoughts on the trade, Brad?
Yeah, I mean, you sort of hit on at the end there. You know, Phillips is not the same guy that he used to be. He was at one point, you know, one of the top, you know, five or six second basemen in the entire league. He's no longer that. But you mentioned this is basically giving up nothing. I mean, McCurahan did reach the major league, so it's not like he's a zero, but not exactly a prospect when you think about it in the most traditional terms, considering he's 27. He's sort of a guy, sort of run-of-the-mill player. And as you mentioned, poor Tuando as someone that's definitely not a prospect. So, yeah, giving up two guys who were borderline at best and basically $1 million to acquire Brandon Phillips is just fine. Like he's not, I think people are going to recognize the name and kind of think that he's better than he is. Mm-hmm. Last year, Phillips was not very good in Cincinnati. And listen, he's 35 years old. He'll be 36 in June. So, you know, guys playing middle infield don't normally age super duper well. And I know he's from Atlanta. He's a local product, but his defense kind of cratered last year by the looks of things, by the numbers. And as you expect, like I'm not really holding that against him. It's just more of his function of being in your mid 30s, mm-hmm. playing second base. And you know his bat's okay. He's fine. But you know this deal, it doesn't move the needle for me in a sense that it's not exactly going to impact things a great deal. We talk about that sort of long-lasting impact here in a second. But my initial thoughts are it's basically giving up nothing for some insurance second base and a guy who who might sell some tickets, honestly, which is kind of funny to say because second basemen don't normally sell a ton of tickets unless they're superstars. But local product, people like him, and he is polarizing, as you said. But baseball only, I think this is fine. And they don't really trade anything. If they've given up anything of value, I think I was talking to a few people when this was all going down on Saturday night and just basically thinking, look, this is fine unless they traded something of value. And they basically didn't. So because they didn't do that, it's fine.
Yeah, the prospects that the Braves sent over to the Reds were even less than what I was thinking. And the whole time I kind of figured that they weren't going to be sending over too much. So I was happy with it. The Braves had to do this deal because of Sean Rodriguez, his left shoulder. I believe the car accident that he got in this offseason with his family. Originally, the team didn't think it was going to be an issue, but according to Mark Bowman's story that he has on Braves.com, you should check out if you haven't read yet, the team didn't know until Friday morning that this was even going to be an issue that they needed to address. So they completed this deal within 48 hours of finding out that Rodriguez was going to have surgery. And he can be out anywhere from 3 months to the entire season. I believe Mark tweeted just a few minutes ago, actually, right when we were kind of starting up this podcast, that he's going to see Dr. James Andrews this week, and we'll know more about the timetable for Rodriguez's return. But I wouldn't expect to see him anytime soon. And really, if they're going to play it safe, I mean, you have the options. You have the players who could really handle second base for the entire year. It's kind of disappointing because I know a lot of people were excited to see Rodriguez in the lineup after his really strong year in 2016. I know I was. Do you think this is a downgrade at second base for the Braves in 2017, or do you think it's kind of a no gain, really, or no loss, or do you think it's worse? What do you think? In my opinion, I think it's probably not going to change too much. I was kind of excited about the potential upside that Rodriguez could give the Braves, at least offensively, just because of his year. Maybe if he had a legit change in his hitting approach or his mechanics that could maybe carry over to 2017, I feel like he might be able to offer you a little bit more. Phillips seems pretty one-dimensional as a hitter at this point, but what are your thoughts on the Braves' second base outlook and his bat in the lineup compared to Rodriguez?
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, Phillips is, again, you know, the much bigger name, but I was just like you, sort of hoping that Rodriguez was sort of tapping into that potential that he showed a year ago. I think Phillips is maybe safer to project at a pretty low level. Like, for instance, last season, he's basically worth one win above replacement, which is nothing terribly special. But again, you're paying him $1 million, so mm-hmm. it's fine. I don't know. It's a downgrade in that Rodriguez could have played all over the place. There was some thought that he'd be playing some third base, some maybe even some outfield as a fourth guy. Phillips is not going to do that. He's going to be a second baseman purely and simply. The presence of Jace Peterson does allow the Braves to kind of play around with that because Jace can play all over the place. Mm-hmm. And he was probably already going to do that. We talked about that a couple weeks ago and that Peterson might be the backup center fielder right now if all things are equal, which is kind of crazy. But this allows Jace to kind of not be the everyday second baseman anymore. Mm-hmm. I think it's pretty safe to assume that Phillips is going to play a lot, at least early on. It may not be a full-time, 7-day-a-week starter, but I think he's going to play quite a bit. He'll play against every lefty, I'd imagine, and probably some righties as well. He might even be the full-time guy. We can get into that later in the spring, I'm sure. But, yeah, he's going to play a lot, and Jace is going to play all over the place. And at second baseman, I was skeptical, at least personally, that Rodriguez is going to play there a ton anyway. I think mm-hmm. he probably would have been sort of more of a utility player. So in terms of overall play it just at second base, I don't think it really moves the needle a ton. I just think Phillips is not exactly an exciting player. He's just okay at this point. And I'm not trying to crap on him too badly here. It's just that guys that are going to be 36 here, I can't imagine he's going to be having a huge step forward from last year. I mean, it's at least possible that he could have a better season than he did a year ago. And if you're an old school guy, he did hit .291 mm-hmm. last season. Congratulations to those of you who still like batting average, nothing else. But he doesn't walk. The power has kind of dissipated over the years. His defense is probably, it always was good. Now it doesn't seem to like probably going to be anything but average at best. And, I don't know. It's sort of a capped upside player. I mean, mm-hmm. I feel like I'm saying that over and over again, but it's okay and nothing more.
Yeah, I actually kind of like this for Jace, just because I would like to see him play at pretty much every other position except for second base more, just because I feel like his role in the future is going to be as a super utility guy. So I'm really excited to see him get more games at other positions like center field, left field, right field, third, maybe even spell Dansby at shortstop on occasion. He played at short in the minors, and he's definitely capable of handling that position. Probably wouldn't want him there on an everyday basis, but with Rodriguez in the fold, I feel like Jace would be playing much more often at second base. And with Phillips, as you said, kind of penciled into that one spot, he's not really that utility type that Sean is. I feel like this will be good for Jace's development, or at least I hope that it will be, and I'm excited to see him playing some of these other positions. Do you feel like that'll help him at all, or do you really care about that?
I've always been a big fan of Jace, so yeah, I think you might have a point there. It is worrisome. We should probably go back to Rodriguez at some point. It is worrisome that he'll be out just because the Braves made a bit of a commitment to Rodriguez. So it's one of those things where hopefully he's back by maybe the All-Star break, maybe a little bit after that. But the reports are not super encouraging, as you said. And I think, again, like, even if he wasn't going to be playing a ton of second base, my point has always been that he might have been the best third baseman on the roster. Mm-hmm. So it's a hit in that respect. I can imagine a scenario in which Phillips replicates that production this season, but Rodriguez was locked down for more than 1 year, et cetera, and hopefully he gets healthy anyway. But I don't know. It's interesting, and it's not great in the aggregate just because you have already assigned some money to Rodriguez, and now you've assigned a little bit more, but it's a very small amount.
Yeah, so Rodriguez is owed $5.75 million this year for 2017. It looks like the Braves aren't going to be getting much value for that at this point. And then the same amount in 2018. So, which might be fine, but
shoulders are weird though, man. Like, you don't want to mess around with shoulders. We always talk about that with pitchers, even, shoulders are even worse than elbows for hitters as well. Like,
and it's his left shoulder too. Power. As a right-handed hitter, I feel like the left shoulder might even be worse just because it's kind of going through the with the swing. I feel like it's getting more stress. Your left shoulder. I'm not a pro by any means in this regard, but I feel like it'd be better if it was his back shoulder. Either way, you obviously don't want to commit that much money to a player and get nothing from it. And initially, when we heard how long Rodriguez was going to be out, I feel like it was okay. I mean, we heard the 3 to 5 months. That was obviously, you don't want to ever hear months at the beginning of a season like this. But I feel like the more details we've heard, it's kind of gotten progressively worse and worse. But again, he's meeting with Dr. James Andrews this week at some point. So hopefully we can find out when exactly we should expect him to be back. I feel like Ozzie Albies might factor into this a little bit. Obviously, Albies is dealing with an injury of his own, or at least rehabbing from that elbow injury that he had. Clearly, the Braves weren't ready to go into the season without some kind of second baseman to pencil in on a regular basis. Obviously, they don't want to go with Jace Peterson every day at second, or else they wouldn't have made this move in the first place. But I feel like this speaks to what they think Albies is going to be doing this year. And it seems like he's going to be getting a majority of his playing time at Gwinnett. Is that a surprise to you, or does that tell you anything? Or what do you think about Ozzie kind of in this situation?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people were freaking out about this, you know, with Phillips, like, quote unquote, blocking Albies. Mm-hmm. That's not something that's going to matter to me. If Phillips is good, then they could trade him. Or if for some reason, you know, if the Braves are suddenly red hot, they can ride it out. Yeah. If he's not good, he won't be blocking Albies for long. If Albies is tearing it up in Gwinnett and Phillips is not playing well, the Braves have very little reason to keep Phillips on the roster. It's not a situation. Same thing with a no trade clause, but that was a topic of conversation on Sunday, even before the news broke that the Braves were going to sort of honor it, but not in a full way. You know, it's interesting. They don't have to pay a whole lot to get out of it. And even then, they could just cut Brandon Phillips at any mm-hmm. moment. They owe him $1 million. So the no trade stuff kind of made me laugh because, you know, okay, if you don't want to get traded, we're just going to cut you. Like, it doesn't matter. So yeah. If Phillips is good, it's great. And if he's not, and Albies is, there's no way it's going to take very long for the Braves to move on from Phillips. That's kind of a situation where I'm okay with it in either direction. Hopefully Albies, you know, gives him a longer leash. I still think that if he's just super healthy and tearing it up early on, then we'll probably see him sooner rather than later. But, you know, it just gives him a little bit more time. Albies is still incredibly young. I think people want to push him along, and for good reason, because he's the number one guy that's still in the minor leagues with Dansby already on the roster. But there's no reason to super-duper push Albies, considering his super young age and the fact that that they probably don't want him to be the starting guy on opening day. If they thought that was a possibility, they probably don't do this. Also, your point about Peterson as well. So take your time with Albies. If he's you know, red hot in May or June and Phillips is struggling, then just pull the trigger then.
Yep. The Phillips blocking Albies thing kind of just reminds me of Eric Ibar last year. Obviously, we're not expecting Phillips to be one of the worst players in baseball, but I mean, when Dansby Swanson was ready to come up, the team got rid of Ibar and put Dansby in the lineup on a regular basis. So I would imagine if something similar happens, you're going to see the same results there. There's no way the 35-year-old that, again, you're only paying $1 million for is going to block one of your top prospects. And a guy like Ozzie Albies, they love that guy. They're not going to let Phillips block him or hurt his development or anything like that. So if you're worried about that, I feel like you're worrying about the wrong things. Anything else on Phillips? I feel like we pretty much covered that one. Again, not gonna change the outlook for the team too much. And really, the deal is fine for me. I think, again, the team didn't give up too much. It's not really a high-risk trade or anything, so I'm fine with it.
Yeah, my big takeaway is that for Braves fans who probably don't follow the rest of the league super duper closely, this is not Brandon Phillips from 5 years ago. That would be all I would say about the deal, is that Phillips is now just okay and not a star, which he was a star at one point. There's no question about it. He was very, very good at baseball, but now he's not really that good anymore. So temper your expectations just a little bit.
Yeah, and if you want to look at the projections, I meant to touch on this earlier, but Steamer has Sean Rodriguez projected as a negative player, which I think is a little low, but again, I'm higher on his bat just because of his last, his 2016 season. They projected him for 85 WRC plus. Brandon Phillips is projected for an 83 WRC plus and a 0.8 WAR season. So I would say I'm a little higher on Rodriguez and a little lower on Phillips based on those projections, but it's not much of a difference. When you look at the what the computer thinks these guys are going to be doing or would be doing if Rodriguez was healthy. So,
not surprising in any way there, by the way. It's just, you know, computers are always kind of bringing stuff to the middle. A couple of those projection systems this week, you know, Pecota said, what, 76 wins for the Braves, something like that. And
that was funny because Pecota, when it originally came out, it was like 75. And then literally like 15 minutes after they came out, like all the teams got nudged up or changed. In the NL East, they were all nudged up, but they all like changed really quick, and I don't know how that works, but yeah, 76 wins according to Pecota.
Just an error in the spreadsheet somewhere, I'm sure. But listen, it's no huge change here in terms of the Braves in 2017, as much as it's a lot of fun to talk about, and we will definitely talk about it, as we just did for 15 minutes or so. It's sort of a shuffling of the deck chairs is probably the best way to put it. But anyway,
I'm just excited to see if anything happens with Phillips in the clubhouse. He's a guy that's had some run-ins a few times.
Not shy, I'll say that. I mean, people love him for it, or they hate him for it. Yeah. So I'll be interested to see how he fits in, because the Braves are sort of pretty boring in terms of the clubhouse. I know you can vouch for that more than even I can, because you were around them constantly for a whole summer.
But I feel like this team has completely changed since I've been there, though, so I don't really want to comment.
That's true, but like, I mean, even as an organization, like this is a they have a reputation for being a very boring, in a good way, kind of clubhouse, like a good culture. Yeah, kind of thing. So we'll see how Phillips fits in, but he is a local product, so that probably helps a little bit.
Yeah, real quick before we move on from Phillips, if you don't mind, do you think that having a guy who's been holding down a keystone at a major league level for so long, do you think that is actually a good thing for someone like Ozzy coming up and maybe learning from him or talking to him in spring training? Do you buy into that at all, or what? Because I feel like that could be a really good thing. I mean, this is a guy who's been in the league since 2002. And he's really been an everyday guy since then. I mean, he's compiled 1,749 games at second base at a major league level. That's impressive, regardless of what he is right now. That's not easy to do.
Yeah, I mean, it can't hurt, I would say. I'm always skeptical to kind of say how much of that off-field stuff really matters, but it definitely can't hurt to have a guy who knows what he's doing. For better or worse, Phillips at least has been around for a long time. You mentioned when he debuted in 2002. One of the funny things that I uncovered when I'm doing a little bit of research here and kind of remembered happening is that Brandon Phillips is kind of so I don't want to say old, but mature, that he was drafted by the Montreal Expos.
Wow.
So 1999, June amateur draft, second round pick by the Montreal Expos. So that kind of tells you just kind of, he's on the downside of his career, but it's good to have veteran presence, quote unquote, in the clubhouse. And, a guy like that being around Ozzy is not a bad thing, because, you're right. I mean, in front of him, Rodriguez is a guy who's played second base, Jason's played second base, but neither one of those guys is a full-time, blue blood second baseman that's always been there. Phillips has played there for a long, long time. So it probably helps a little bit.
All right, very cool. We can move on from Phillips now. We mentioned the 76-win Pecota projection. I know the or Vegas, they came out with some of their projections. Do you want to talk about that since you're a resident gambling expert? I feel like that's
I always take handicapping full on. But yeah, it's the Atlantis Casino actually in Reno, so not quite Vegas, but Nevada at least. Was the first one to come out with this. Normally the offshore books, for those of you who are degenerates like me, are usually first on this kind of stuff, but it was a Reno Casino that got ahead early on this one. They put the Braves at 71.5 wins. That was a cover story on ESPN Chalk this week. For those of you that don't know, ESPN Chalk is sort of their handicapping vertical over at ESPN. So yeah, my first thought was this is kind of low. And I think at least I have earned the reputation on this podcast for being pretty negative and skeptical about the Braves. And I thought this number was low. So it really kind of surprised me to see that number come out where it was, because of the fact that there's some optimism around the Braves. I know they only won 68 games a year ago, but this is a different team than it was then. And also, they were basically a 500 team for the last 2-3 months of last year. So 71.5 feels low. That's something that's going to sound a lot like a Braves blog thing to say. But even for me, someone who's quite low and always mentions that this is not going to be a playoff team this year, et cetera, 71.5 seems quite low. Is that kind of what you were thinking as well?
Yeah. So you're saying we should take the over on this one?
I believe so. I unless you're in Reno right now, I don't think you can bet on this anywhere. But if the number stays that low anywhere else that you might be able to do it in the coming days, I would definitely recommend the over if you were to choose a side. There's a long way to go before the season, so you might want to wait, see if there's any injuries, that kind of stuff, if you want to see how close you can get to the wire. But if you want to take advantage of what I think is a very low number, I would think get in early on this one.
All right, so according to Brad, use all your savings and take the over on the Braves.
That is not what I said at all, Carlos.
I do think this is low. I've projected I don't have any projection system, but I predicted the Braves to win 75 games. That'd be a 7-game improvement from 2016. This is only 3 games, roughly. I think the Braves have improved more than that. Obviously, it depends on some of the other teams that they're going to be playing. I feel like I'm kind of bullish on the Braves too, like you, but I was pretty surprised with how low this was. It'll be interesting to see where these numbers kind of move as we go through spring training. But nothing crazy there. I feel like most people that we've talked to projected the Braves even higher than what me and you think. So I feel like most people are going to think this is pretty low.
Yeah, I think somewhere still. I mean, I'm holding off to make an official prediction until later, and I think we should do that like almost as a full show later on in spring training. But right now, I mean, my projection will be somewhere in the mid 70s.
Yeah.
So even if you're trying to use the lowest number of that, 73 and 89 would be pretty conservative, I think, and that would still be over. So kind of tells you a lot.
Yep. I was just looking at the 1999 draft where Brandon Phillips was taken. And
of course you are.
I feel like the second round was better than the first round that year. The first round is really terrible, and the Braves don't even have a pick. They traded theirs to the Cardinals. You want to know who the Braves took in the 1999 draft and gave to the Cardinals?
Adam Wainwright.
Adam Wainwright, 1999? Is that right?
That was my guess. No, I'm kidding.
I was about to say, am I looking at the right thing?
No, I was just guessing.
Oh, no. It was some guy named Chance Capel. You ever heard of him?
Oh, man. I got nothing for you on
number,
that one.
Number 30. So, terrible draft in 1999.
It's like we need to bring in Gandhi or somebody that would remember all these things.
Yeah, he'd break down the whole round, tell us about each player, give us a scouting report.
Yep, but you're younger than I am, and I didn't know, so there you go.
Yeah, I guess I was only 5 years old for that draft, but whatever.
Oh, good Lord, let's move on.
Speaking of draft, Baseball America released their top 100. They are experts on the draft. But this weekend, it was more about the prospects in the minor leagues and in farm systems currently. No surprise, really, that the Braves had the most prospects on the top 100 list for Baseball America. I believe they're 3-for-3 or 2-for-3 with one tie with Pipeline's list. But they had 8 players on Baseball America's list. I feel like Ozzy Albies is higher on this list than any list, including Keith Law, and Keith was pretty high on Ozzy as well. The full list or all 8 players were Dansby, Ozzy Albies, Colby Allard, Mike Soroka, Ian Anderson, Ronald Acuña, I believe that's the correct pronunciation, Kevin Maiton, and Sean Newcomb. And for Baseball America, all these guys are in the top 78. Newcomb is last on this list at number 78, so that's really impressive. And Dansby was actually lower on this list than the other two major lists, which was not a huge surprise. I mean, I think they varied from 1 to – or was Pipeline 2? Do you remember off the top of your head? Don't want to call you out here, but
– I want to say that was right, but, they all run together at a certain point.
And Pipeline both had Swanson at 2. So really the only thing you could gripe about for Baseball America, if you're a Braves fan, is having Dansby lower than all the other – main draft outlets by one spot. So
and if you're griping about that, it's probably time to reevaluate things.
Exactly. If you're griping about a list in general, I feel like you might need to reevaluate things. But
well, there are some lists that are bad. This is not one of them. This feels fine. Baseball America's smart. But that's not the nitpicking point. I do want to say though, shouts to Mike Soroka, top 50.
That was very high. I know Eric was super pumped when he saw that one. I was kind of surprised with how high he was, but one of the, I guess it wasn't interesting when this was, when it kind of initially came out. I believe Eric tweeted the other day that Baseball Prospectus had Ronald Acuña as the Braves' number 2 prospect overall.
Ahead of Albies.
Right? Is that surprising to you not to jump
that
on Baseball Prospectus? But
no, it does surprise me. Only because, you know, Acuña, it's been sort of a meteoric rise for Acuña. Like, a year ago, we were not talking about him in the same way that we are now. So I want to say the hype's getting a little bit out of control there, just a tad bit maybe. I don't want to say that's definitely the case, but it feels like, at least to me, a little bit on the outside looking in. But because I think Albies is a lot safer, I would say. He's a lot closer to the majors, higher pedigree, all those things. But, never a bad thing to hear another positive take on Ronald Acuña because our guys love him. Yeah, you know, Keith Law seems to like him a lot. Obviously Baseball America likes him quite a bit as well. He's in the top 70 here. So, I was surprised, but, not bowled over just because the hype's getting big time for him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's shocking to me because Ozzy has two of the best tools of any Braves prospect, at least according to Baseball America. If you, you should definitely check out their list on their website. If you haven't already, I'd recommend subscribing as well. They have a lot of really good information that'll be useful to you as a Braves fan. But, if you look at Dansby's tools, and he's obviously the Braves' top prospect, his best is a 60. He's got 460 tools, so that's extremely impressive. Those are all plus tools. His hit tool, speed, fielding, and arm are all 60s. Obviously really impressive across the board, but I was going through their list, and I got to Albies and saw that he had 270 grade tools, which is plus-plus, which is extremely impressive. You don't see multiple 70s on a position player a whole lot, but they gave his hit tool a 70 grade and his speed a 70 grade. which was more than I thought. I figured his hit tool would be a 60 around what Dansby's was, and I feel like I've been underestimating his speed as well. So I think this is good for you, Brad, because you're the resident Aussie hater, so you need to look at these tools and just be impressed.
Listen, I don't hate Ozzy. I think Ozzy's good. The first time I saw him
banging this drum until someone tells me to stop, though. So
it's fine. I mean, the first time I saw him play in person, the first take I had was that he's incredibly small. But the second take I had was that he's incredibly fast. That guy can move. So not a surprise there. But the hit tool, yeah, your point. I would have expected something in the 60 range as well. So 7 hit tools, that's high, it seems. But hey, maybe he probably needs to be that, to be honest, to be what people seem to project him to be. Mm-hmm. If he actually is a 70 hit tool guy, then that makes some sense. If he could actually do that, because the power's not really there, and et cetera. There's other issues. But if he actually is that kind of hitter, then he'll become the guy that people think he might become.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I feel like with Acuna too. I feel like people are kind of all over the board with what they project his power to be. BA puts his power tool at just a 50, which is average, major league average. And I feel like I've heard from several people that have said he's got legit power, and they're projecting that power. So it'll be interesting to see what kind of numbers he puts up this year. I'm excited to see more of Ronald Acuna. Obviously, he's going to be one of the more interesting prospects to watch. A lot of people are extremely high on him, as we just talked about. But any last comments or feedback on this list, or do you think we can move on from that?
No, it's another list. I mean, it's worth talking about. Maiton being there is interesting as well, as mm-hmm. always. But Soroka, shouts to him. Shouts to Eric, who is in on Soroka first. We have to mention that every time.
Yeah, that's his guy.
When he wins the Cy Young in 2021, we're going to be talking about how Eric was on it. So aside from that, no, we're good. It's always time to talk about these things, and it's good that we can get out of the way. But I'm excited for some actual baseball to talk about, yeah. I will say.
We've been talking about hypotecalities for so long. That's what you have to do. Watch stuff.
It's February. I mean, baseball is going to happen shortly, but until then, this stuff can occupy our minds and entertain us, so I'm good with it.
Yep. All right. Last little note before we wrap up. Jordan Walden is no longer with the team. Are you terribly sad about that?
Carlos, did you know that he jumps when he throws?
Did I know what?
That he jumps when he throws? Like he leaps off the mound?
He does. That's exciting. We should talk about that every time we talk about Jordan Walden.
Did you know that about Jordan Walden,
no,
that he leaps?
I didn't know that. I feel like there's another guy, Carter Capps, he does that. So Jordan Walden, man, we're going to miss that.
Yeah.
Every broadcast, every single one.
Every single broadcast for all time. I do like Jordan Walden, so this is kind of sad in that it was clear that, a mutual opt-out basically is that the Braves thought he couldn't pitch, and Jordan seems to think he can't pitch either, at least right now. It's a health thing. I mean, he's always been good. You look at Jordan Walden's career numbers. They're very, very good. He was once a very productive closer, was in the role for the Braves for a little bit as well. He's a good pitcher. It's just whether, I mean, you have a shoulder issue. Again, we talked about earlier in the podcast with Rodriguez. It's a lot worse for a pitcher, I would say. But, Walden's shoulder is problematic. He's still young enough. Is he 29 or so, something like that?
Yeah, he's 29. He'll turn 30 young enough. In November.
He could come back, but time is probably what you need with a shoulder, and he could just be shot. Unfortunately, that's kind of the reality of the situation especially because he's a power guy, he always was. So it's definitely troublesome. Hopefully, he'll be able to pitch again, but it's not going to be in Atlanta at least anytime soon. It looks like.
Yep. Fortunately, the Braves have a plethora of bullpen options this spring. I feel like that's going to be one of the biggest storylines to watch for Atlanta, just because there's so many different ways the bullpen can shake up. But pitchers and catchers are reporting on Tuesday, and I believe the first full squad workout is Friday for the Braves. So things are finally heating up. We're going to start hearing some news and some reports from beat writers and Kevin McAlpin, who's, I guess, just now gearing up for baseball. He kind of slacked over the offseason, but we're going to start hearing some things from those guys, the guys you follow all year. And shortly after that, we'll be watching baseball, which is fantastic.
Yeah, I mean, I spoke to Zach Dillard of Fox Sports South, front of the podcast. He's been on the show before. He and Corey McCartney are heading down, I think tomorrow to Orlando. It's time, man. We're here. I'm excited about it. There won't be actually a game to talk about for a couple more weeks, pretty much. But getting guys in, seeing all the stories flying around, should be a lot of fun. And we'll actually have stuff to talk about that takes place between the white lines. And we want that more than anything. I know I can speak for myself and probably you as well with that one. It's time to talk about some actual results and things to analyze and et cetera. So I'm very excited about baseball. it's time, and hope springs eternal. Even in the year when the Braves probably aren't winning the World Series, maybe probably not winning the World Series.
It's safe to say no.
But hey, we can dream. Crush your dreams. We can dream. No.
Don't get your hopes up like we all did for the Falcons.
Oh, jeez. That's a full circle. That's a full circle callback from Carlos to end the podcast. But
great storytelling structure, just to let you guys know.
Let me tell you this, though. Listen, the Falcons coming into the season, and the NFL is very different than baseball, but coming into the year, absolutely no one would have projected the Falcons to make the World Series. To make the World Series. To make the Super Bowl.
No one projected them to make the World Series, Brad. That is true.
The Braves are probably more unlikely than the Falcons were, but listen, the Falcons kind of were that redemption story and a good Cinderella tale. Maybe Atlanta can actually complete one of
these. This is a problem with Atlanta sports. People like you get our hopes up and then they come crashing down. So
no one has ever accused me of getting people's hopes up, Carlos. I'm the guy who tears your hopes down. I'm just trying to go on brand.
We should really get a super optimistic person on this podcast to kind of balance us out.
It was McAlpin. McAlpin last week was great.
Yeah, Kevin's he was.
He's an upbeat guy, you know. maybe we'll talk. Between you and I, we'll find our most optimistic Braves fan friend, and we'll have them on to do the "If Everything Goes Right" episode. We could just do one of those where we talk about, like, you know, Freddie winning the MVP, Dansby being Rookie of the Year by a wide margin, and just all these things that could actually happen that probably won't happen all in unison, but maybe they could. Who knows?
Who knows? But we won't know until a few weeks at least about what the team's going to be looking like. We'll be back to talk to you guys next Sunday. Thanks for listening today, whatever day it is that you're listening to the show. Be sure to follow Brad on Twitter at BTRoland. You can find me at Carlos A. Collazo. And also follow the site Talking Chop at Talking Chop.
And subscribe to the show on iTunes, by the way. That really helps us. Leave a 5-star review and a rating, all those things on iTunes. That will help us grow the podcast. So please do that for us.
Yep, definitely do that. Be sure to keep checking out the site this week. We're going to start gearing up for our spring training content. And we'll also hopefully hear about some more details on Sean Rodriguez's shoulder. So stay tuned for that. But thanks for listening, guys, and see you next time.